It's good to see everybody here this morning. Five sermons left. And then the dark days of Ryan Goodwin are over here at Monte Vista. Well, in case you've been living under a rock lately, I've had a lot of big decisions to make in the last few months. Rebecca and I have had a lot of things to think about, whether it was just in the first place, even talking to the elders at East Shelby, even going, and then once we were there, you know, what we were going to do there. And now it's down to things like, how much do you want to sell a house for? What do you want to take as far as an offer? We went last weekend to go look for a house. And I mean, you'd think it'd be like House Hunters, and it'd be this like nice, perfect 25-minute episode, and you'd have three really clear-cut choices, and it would be fun. And we thought we'd be sitting in a coffee shop going, well, I don't know, house number one. It's not. It was a weekend of really a lot of stress and anxiety. And it got me thinking, wouldn't it be nice in the last couple months if I could have just flipped a coin with everything and just let fate or chance or providence, or just let God decide would be even better. Like, God, I don't want to flip a coin. Can you just tell me right now, like on my cell phone screen, like, do I take this path or this path? Do I choose A or B? Which door do I open right now? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just ask God for a sign and he would just tell you everything to do in life and make all your decisions for you? Well, unfortunately, that is a prevalent idea in the religious world. Even among people who claim to be Christians, there's the idea that we just want to look for signs from God, and I'm going to, like, you know, close my eyes and put my finger down on something, and that's just going to be what God tells me to do. Or I'm going to walk into a room and say, and God, the first thing that I meet, or the first door that I come to, or the first option that I see, God, that's your sign to me that that's what you want me to do. That is a very prevalent idea in the religious world, that God gave me a sign, and that's why I'm making this decision right now. And I think really the proof text that people often go to is Judges chapter 6. If you're not familiar with the story of the judges, this is a period in Israel's history when there was no king in Israel. That's a point that's repeated several times in Judges. There was no king in Israel, and people were just doing what seemed right in their own eyes. So God sent people called judges. These were divinely appointed individuals who came to help Israel when they made mistakes and became captives of somebody else. A discipline of some kind, a punishment was brought down, and the judges were then sent to rescue them and to help guide them back spiritually. So you meet a judge here in Judges chapter 6 whose name is Gideon. And at the time, it's the Midianites who are giving so much trouble to Israel. It's so bad that there are Israelites basically hiding in caves up in the mountains for fear of their lives. Nobody's going out, nobody's collecting fruit, nobody's collecting food, nobody's gathering grain for harvest. It's that bad they're so afraid of the Midianites. And so we come to this guy, Gideon, here down in verse 11. So the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak that was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress in order to save it from the Midianites. Now, your first impression of Gideon is pretty good, isn't it? That in a time when everybody else is so afraid that they're hiding in caves, what's Gideon doing? Well, he's out there, you know, out there exposed, trying to make sure that there's food for his family and his community, and nobody else seems to be doing that. So your first impression of him is he seems to be a fairly brave individual. He's there where the Midianites see what he's doing. He's exposed. He's in danger. Must be a pretty brave guy. Now that image of Gideon is very quickly shaken when the angel of the Lord comes to Gideon and says, you're going to deliver Israel from the Midianites. The first thing that Gideon asks is, I need a sign to know that this is really true. I need to know for sure that what God has asked me to do actually comes from God, and that you're not making a mistake here with all of this. So he prepares a meal then. He brings meat and everything, and he sets it out before the angel. And the angel says, pour broth over the top of it, and he does. And immediately the angel makes a fire come up, and it consumes the entire offering. Sign number one, right? Sign number one. So he says, Gideon, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and find the idol that's in your father's household and destroy it. His father being an important person in the community, his house probably served as kind of a central area for worship for a lot of the other people in that area. Now, instead of going by day and doing this as a very public act, Gideon goes in the middle of the night. So that's kind of indication right there of where Gideon really is as far as his bravery and his courage go, that he's doing this in the middle of the night because the text says he's afraid of other people. He's afraid of the people in his father's household and the ramifications of him destroying their precious idol. So he destroys it in the middle of the night. Now later on at the end of chapter 6, we get this very interesting story here. The Midianites and the Amalekites have assembled themselves together in verse 33. In the valley of Jezreel, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Gideon and says, it's time to assemble the troops. You're going to face the Midianites and the Amalekites. This is going to be the battle royale for everybody's safety right now, and the outcome is in your hands, basically. Now, you get to the end of the chapter in verse 36, and Gideon said to God, if thou wilt deliver Israel through me as thou hast spoken, remember that part, okay? Just as you've said, as you have spoken, God, if you will deliver through me, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there's dew on the fleece only and it's dry on all the ground, then I'll know that thou wilt deliver Israel through me as thou hast spoken. And it was so in verse 38. It was so. When he arose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a bowl full of water. So it wasn't just a little bit of dew. It was a lot, a bowl full of water. But then you get to verse 39. Gideon said to God, do not let thine anger burn against me, that I may speak once more. Does he know he's on thin ice here? Yeah, that's an important point of the story that people forget about. He knows he's on thin ice as it is. Please, let me make a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all the ground. And God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on all the ground. Now, a lot of people look at this story and they go, see, signs from God. So when I don't know what to do, should I take the job or not take the job? Do I put my kids in this school district or that school district? Do I homeschool, private school, charter school? Does God really want me to go buy that expensive article of clothing? You know, I'm feeling like treating myself, but I'm going to leave it up to God. And so we say, God, tell you what, if you want me to do this over here, then I want you to make a really clear sign. I want the sun to come out from behind the clouds. And if the clouds are still there, then that means no. And they'll kind of concoct all these ideas of if you do this, God, if it rains next Tuesday, if I put my socks on in the morning and one sock is a little bit longer than the other, and they'll come up with all these ideas of God, I just want to know what to do. Give me a sign. And they'll point to this story in Gideon as this is the proof text that shows God gives you signs when you need a little bit of help along the way. A couple of issues, though, that we want to talk about. A couple of things from the story itself. Rather than endorsing sign-seeking, at least as a regular practice, this story is actually all about God's long-suffering. This is not about God giving signs. This is about God's long-suffering toward a man who is deeply flawed. And that, by the way, that's in the broader narrative of the Judges story. That God repeatedly uses people in the Judges that have flaws of some kind. If not flaws per se in like a character sense, then certainly shortcomings in a social sense, in a physical sense. Ehud being left-handed, Deborah being a woman, Gideon being this man with what seems to be very little courage. And there are others. There are the son of a harlot is another one. I mean, the story of the Judges is finding people who have shortcomings of some kind and yet utilizing them nevertheless for God's purposes. And that fits the broader narrative of the story. Besides, there are elements in the story itself that make it clear that we're not looking at standard practice when it comes to asking for signs from God. The first thing is, these are clearly miraculous things. I mean, the first sign of the meat and everything, the food being consumed by a fire and there being nothing left and an angel of the Lord appearing to Gideon, that's your first indication that you're dealing with the divine, that there is a power beyond earth that is happening here right in front of you. And for a lot of people, a lot of characters in the Bible, hopefully a lot of us, that would have been enough. Okay, God showed me a miracle. It's time to get to work. But instead, Gideon concocts a sign. Remember, God had given him a sign already. He had given him a sign already. Now Gideon concocts a sign. God, if this is really what you want me to do, and that's why I said remember that verse. Because God had already said that. There should have been no question. There was no if you will deliver Israel through me just as you have spoken. Where does the if come from? This is God that you're talking about. Where does the if come from? With God there is no if. Maybe. Remember what Jesus' response was? When a father came to him with a son who needed miraculous healing, if you can, and what was Jesus' response to the statement of if you can? If you can, if, there is no if with God. So to me, that's a real issue right there, because God had already said what he wanted to say on the matter. He already made a decision. And we need to be really careful. We think that when we ask for signs, that, well, God, if you really want me to do this, or if this is really part of your will, you know what his will is? It's what's already been revealed in the Word. You know what his will is. You know the right thing to do. You know the wrong thing to do. You know what sin is. You know what righteousness is. There is no question of what those things are when it comes to God's will. And if God hasn't revealed something, then he either doesn't care, right? Buy that expensive dress. Get that new watch. I don't think God really cares about that. Either God doesn't care, or he just wants you to use your best judgment. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the lesson. We've got a whole slide about that, by the way. But this idea of these signs that he asked for, these are all clearly miraculous things. So when we say things like, God, I'm young and I'm single and I really would like to find a mate in my life. I'm going to walk into a coffee shop, God, and I'm going to close my eyes. And the first person that I point to, that's who I'm going to marry, and I'm going to take it as a sign from God. That's a little bit different than Gideon saying, God, I want you to show me a clear-cut miracle. That's a little bit different, isn't it? Not only that, but are you willing to actually ask for miracles? I think people don't really think about that very often. They say, God, I need a sign. Show me a sign. Are you sure that's not just coincidence? You know, like a bird landing on your fence in the backyard, or the sun coming out from behind clouds, or an icicle falling from the, you know, where's anybody finding an icicle, by the way? I don't know where that came from. We were listening to Christmas music in the car on the way here, and I think that's maybe where it came from. But are you actually asking for God to do something, or are you just asking for some kind of a sign that could just be anything coincidental or happenstance? Gideon was asking for miracles, and he got miracles. We don't have that same luxury. We don't have that same luxury. Let's move on to another point here. Let's move on to another point here. What about Acts 1:26 or Proverbs 16, verse 33? Because if Gideon isn't like the be-all, end-all chapter on asking for signs from God, then how about Acts 1:26, where when they were trying to find someone to replace Judas to count among the 12 apostles, they left it up to basically drawing straws. They cast lots to decide between one man and another to decide which one was going to be considered part of the 12 apostles. And somebody looks at Acts chapter 1 and says, see, they left it up to chance, but in leaving it up to chance, they were actually leaving it up to God. They drew straws, flipped a coin, cast lots to determine which one of these two men was going to become a part of the 12 apostles. And in doing that, they're leaving it up to God, basically. So what's the difference between Acts 1 with the apostles and me when I flip a coin? God, I'm going to flip a coin, and whichever one, you know, however it lands, that's your choice, God. That's up to you. Okay, a couple things about Acts chapter 1 that we need to make clear. First of all, we're dealing with apostles here. These are inspired men. You're not an apostle. You're not inspired. That right there is some indication of maybe Acts 1:26 isn't supposed to be some kind of standard practice proof text for asking for signs from God. They're apostles. They're inspired. The second thing is this. Who picked the original 12 apostles? Jesus did. God picked the original 12 apostles. And I think out of their respect for God's authority, the 11 apostles who remain, they understand that it's not their choice. They do not get to pick who the 12th apostle is. So they have selected some means by which they can leave it up to God through casting lots. Now again, I'm real leery about taking one isolated thing and turning it into standard practice. To me, you don't do that in almost every other area of life, so why would you do it in this case? You're dealing with apostles, they're inspired, and they're filling an office that only God is allowed to choose. That is very different. Apostles inspired and an office that only God is allowed to choose. That is very different from trying to decide if you want to take a job somewhere. That is very different from trying to decide if you want to go on a second date with somebody. That is very different than trying to decide if you want to buy a Ford or a Chevy. That is very different. And I think what we do is actually, we do a disservice to the text of Acts chapter 1 to try and fit every little thing in our lives asking for a sign from God by casting lots or drawing straws and try to fit that into the circumstance of Acts chapter 1. To me, there's just too many things of that circumstance that do not line up with almost any other area of our lives today, and I just don't see how you can take Acts 1 as a proof text. But what about Proverbs 16 verse 33? Looking at Proverbs 16, verse 33, this one, a little harder to deal with, actually. 16:33, it says here, "The lot is cast in the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord." Oh, okay. So a lot of people look at this verse, and the conclusion that they come to is there's no such thing as chance. There's no such thing as coincidence. That everything that we might deem to be coincidence is actually God flipping coins for us. It's actually God picking which straw is the longest or shortest. It's actually everything that we see as coincidence is actually God flicking things over and moving things around and moving chess pieces and knocking dominoes. And every little tiny thing in life is meant to be interpreted as a sign. So you find a close parking spot at the mall and you go, "It's a sign from God." You accidentally put a red sock in the white load and everything turns pink. It's a sign from God. You're watching the news and in a commercial with a song from your childhood is playing. You go, "It's a sign from God." And everything, every little thing that somebody else might call coincidence suddenly becomes a sign from God. And is that what Proverbs 16 verse 33 is saying? Okay, a couple things about the Proverbs that we need to remember here. The Proverbs are not meant to be kind of catch-all. They're not meant to be something that is always true. They're truisms. Okay, and the idea of a truism is it's something that can be true under certain circumstances, but it's not like you can take every single psalm or every proverb, excuse me, and say that this always happens. These are meant to be little sayings, little things to just keep in mind. There's a nugget of truth in all of them that applies in some circumstances. And you could look at almost any of these proverbs and think of circumstances where they're not true. Really, you look at the whole book of Ecclesiastes, and Ecclesiastes is meant to be kind of a response to Proverbs, where Proverbs says, if you're wise, this is always the result. Ecclesiastes comes in like a cynical old man and says, actually, there's a lot of circumstances where but that's not true. That's not true. Proverbs says, righteousness always does this, and wisdom always results in this, and foolish people always turn out like this. And Ecclesiastes says, Actually, there are several times where that doesn't happen. So we got to be really careful when it comes to the Proverbs, that the Proverbs are truisms, but it doesn't mean that they're always true in every single circumstance. I mean, you could look at almost any one of these Proverbs, and you could think of, like I said, you could think of circumstances where that is not the case. So we got to be really careful there about that. Now, the other thing about Proverbs 16, verse 33 is this. The truism behind this verse is not that every single coincidence is God's providential handling of your life. That's not the truism. The truism is this, that you have to leave room within coincidence for the providence of God. Let me say that again to be really clear. The truism behind this Proverbs is not that everything in your life is God manipulating everything and knocking dominoes over and flipping coins for you. That's not what Proverbs 16:33 is saying. Proverbs 16:33 is saying that within the realm of coincidence, you must respect the providential working of God. That something that you might dismiss as mere coincidence may in fact be providence from God. So we've got to be really careful there about applying the Proverbs in a consistent way. Proverbs 16, verse 33 is not saying that you can just ask for a sign from God whenever you want it or flip a coin and that God is the one who flipped that coin for you and made that decision for you. Has God really said something on the matter? I think that's an important question to ask. Before we assume that God is giving us a sign and helping us make a decision in some way, we need to ask, has God already said something on the matter? Has God said something and you just don't like it? Because maybe God has revealed His will in a certain area and you just don't care for what it is. Go to Micah chapter 6 and verse 8 and notice here what He has to say in Micah 6 verse 8. He has told you, O man, what is good, but what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? You know, that verse to me is saying, God's given you enough to work with already in this life. You want to know what to do with your life? You want to know what decision to make? You want to know where to go? Right, left, door number one, door number two? Has God not already told you plenty of information? He has told you, O man, what you must do, and that is to be righteous, and to be just, and to be merciful, and to love Him with all your heart. He's already told you what to do. Maybe the issue is not that God hasn't given you any information, but that you don't like the information that He has given you. Maybe that job that you really want to take is going to require you to work on Sundays every now and then. You know that already. You know it already. I probably shouldn't take that because I know I'm going to have to make a compromise there. You know that already. And so by asking for some kind of sign from God or some kind of coincidental confirmation, maybe what you're doing is trying to avoid what God has already said about something. And a new job that requires you to compromise, or any kind of decision for that matter that requires moral compromise, I think God already told you what He had to say about that. Matthew chapter 19, for example, the story of the rich young ruler. He asked Jesus, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, you know, I think you already know what you need to do, don't you? You honor your father and your mother and you don't commit these sins and you do these things. And he says, well, I've done all these things already. And Jesus looks at him with love in his heart. And he says, well, okay, I'll tell you one more thing. There's one thing that you're lacking. Sell all your possessions, give them to the poor and come follow after me. I don't think the rich young ruler liked that answer. He didn't like that. The issue wasn't that God didn't give him enough information. The issue was that he didn't like the information that God gave to him. And I think that happens sometimes when we're looking for signs from God. We're not looking for a sign from God. We're looking for a reason not to do what God has already told us. Another question, though. Are you dealing with two equally good options in a moral sense? Which choice helps you or hinders you spiritually? Because a lot of these big decisions in life of whether to move or whether to take a job or whether to stay, a lot of these things, they really are morally neutral. You know, you can be good equally in one or the other. And if that's not the case, then I think you've had your decision made for you. Going along with that, I'll add these. I think these go hand in hand here. What are your motivating factors in that decision? Is it about more money, or is it about more time with your kids? Is it about more prestige in a worldly sense, or is it about more freedom to serve in the church? Is it about something that you can be more proud of, or is it something that makes you more humble? I mean, what questions are you really asking when it comes to all these things? Because many of the big decisions in life really don't seem that complicated when you just kind of boil them down to a moral sense or a spiritual sense. They're really not that difficult. Are you really willing to leave life's big choices in the hands of accident or coincidence? When people are looking for signs from God and they see something, a bird with an olive branch in its clutches, like, you know, there's a lot of birds that carry branches in their claws. But, you know, there's a lot. Rainbows come out. I mean, there's always rainbows. Not very often here in Phoenix because it never rains. But, you know, things like that is, you know, things happen. Things happen. There are animals do strange things. The weather does strange things. Your car does strange things. Your body does strange things. You feel sore. You know, like, oh, my ankle's really sore today. I wonder what God is trying to tell me. Are you really willing to let your life be dictated by things that could, and let's be honest, probably are just coincidence? Are you really willing to let your life be dictated by that? Because I think what's going on, what on the outside seems to be respecting God's providence, right? It's a veneer, isn't it, that says, I just want to do what God tells me to. I want to do whatever God's will is, whatever His providence is, I'm going to do it. Maybe that's just a veneer that covers up your deep desire to remove any responsibility from yourself. Because if all of my decisions are just determined by something that happens to me, by traffic that morning, if all of my life's big decisions are determined by stuff like that, coincidence, natural things, the weather, birds, animals, seeing something on sale that day at Ross, or a billboard at McDonald's, If all of my life's decisions are decided by that sort of thing, then I get to wash my hands of all responsibility and say, you know, it was a sign from God. I was just doing what God told me to do, right? It means I don't have to take responsibility for my decisions. I don't have to take responsibility and say, you know what? This is up to me. This is up to my family. This is up to us. You know what? The buck stops here. I'm going to make a choice and live with it. I'm going to make a choice and accept the consequences of it. Because if everything is a sign from God, and that's how God tells us how to live, then you never have to accept responsibility for it. And the buck doesn't stop with you. So I guess the most important question is, what's really going on in your heart? What's really going on? Now, Jesus says very clearly in both Matthew chapter 12 and Matthew chapter 16, in very similar language in both texts, when people ask Him for a sign, show us a sign, what is Jesus' response? An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it. Well, let's talk about this first of all. An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. Well, why would God say that? Well, it's like we've already said. God's already told you what to do. He's already given you enough information in His Word that as far as the really important things go in life, the moral decisions, the spiritual decisions, the big family decisions, you already know what you need to do. You don't need a sign. You don't need a sign. No sign shall be given you. And an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, because for an evil and adulterous generation, whatever God says is never enough. God could tell you something and you go, eh, I need more. And He could tell you something else, eh, I need more. And He could tell you something else and you go, eh, I'm still not convinced. And I think that's why Gideon's story is in the Bible, isn't it? An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. And I wonder how exasperated God became with Gideon. And he might look at Gideon and go, excuse me, I already did your little fleecy game there. You know, we already played the... And you're asking me to do another little fleecy game with you? I thought we already did that, Gideon. And you know, the most telling part of that story is that even in a story about asking for signs from God, Gideon knows he's wrong. That's the ironic part of it. Gideon knows he's wrong. Because he begs God, don't be mad. I know I shouldn't be doing this. I know that this is, you know, this is not protocol. Please don't be angry with me, but I'm going to ask another sign from you. Please. Gideon knows he's wrong. He knows it's what he shouldn't be doing. An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. And no sign will be given it except for the sign of Jonah, which Jesus says in Matthew chapter 12 is that Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish. And the Son of Man is going to be 3 days and three nights in the ground. God has given us a sign. The greatest sign of all is the resurrection. That somewhere there is an empty tomb. And perhaps that tomb has been filled in with earth. Perhaps that empty tomb has had other bodies placed in it at some point. Perhaps that empty tomb was bulldozed to make room for a condo at some point. But when they came on the first day of the week to find the body of Jesus, what they found was an empty spot in the ground with linen wrappings tidily folded up. There was an empty tomb. And just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, so the Son of Man was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the earth, and he emerged victorious. That is the sign that we get. And if you're not a Christian, what more could you possibly ask for? What more do you need? The evil and adulterous generation would look at the sign and they'd say, I need more. I remember a great atheist one time said, if God would just appear in the sky as some massive golden being, well, I'd believe in God. And then he thought about it after, he said, no, I probably still wouldn't believe. That was Richard Dawkins, and I appreciate his honesty. Even if God appeared as a giant golden colossus in the sky, you'd still have a hard time believing in God. Because if all you want is signs from God, you'll just want more, and you'll want more, and you'll want more. Jesus himself said, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. It's time to believe. It's time to listen to the revealed Word of God, which has given you everything that you need to know for life and godliness, 2 Peter 1, verse 3. And if that's not enough, then we need to have a conversation and talk a little bit more about this together. So whatever spiritual need you have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.